Today is our fourth entry in this seven-week series from the books of Ezra and Nehemiah. We've completed Ezra, and today we start on Nehemiah. As you will recall, in 597 BC, the Babylonian Empire defeated the southern kingdom of Judah and laid waste to its capital, Jerusalem. The Babylonians tore down the walls of the city and destroyed the great temple, which had been built by King Solomon. And they carried many of the elite members of the community back to Babylon. 58 years after that, in 539 BC, the Persian Empire, led by King Cyrus, defeated the Babylonians. And Cyrus issued an edict allowing the Jews in Babylon to return home. The initial wave of Jewish exiles, and there were about 50,000 of them, returned to Judah and immediately set about reestablishing worship and rebuilding the great temple. And this rebuilding of the temple took about 20 years. So, about 50 years after that first wave of returnees, King Artaxerxes of Persia sent Ezra back to Judah with the instructions to bring back a report on what was going on in the province. And Ezra took with him the second major wave of exiles. Today, we come to the book of Nehemiah. The books of Ezra and Nehemiah are considered by many scholars originally to have been a single book. And these books appear to have been compiled from three different sources. First, we have the memoirs. We have the memoirs of Ezra and of Nehemiah, telling of their time and experience in Jerusalem. Second, we find historical documents, the letters, the edicts, the proclamations, and more. And then third are those lists of gold and silver and valuable goods, list of people in the form of census and genealogies. The book of Nehemiah opens with Nehemiah's memoirs, and he writes, "The words of Nehemiah, son of Hakaliah, in the month of Chislev in the 20th year, while I was in Susa, the capital." Nehemiah is a Jewish descendant of those exiles. He lives in Babylon, and he serves the king as the king's cupbearer. Now, the cupbearer would have been something like a personal assistant slash butler slash secretary. The cupbearer would spend a great deal of personal time in the presence of the king and his family, and this person would need to be someone of honesty and good character. Clearly, Nehemiah is all of these. This book opens with Nehemiah receiving news about Jerusalem from his brother Hanani. Now, Hanani could be an actual blood brother, or he could be a Jewish brother. We don't know. Hanani has just returned from Judah, and he informs Nehemiah, the survivors are in great trouble and shame. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates have been destroyed by fire. Now, it's not clear here if Hanani is referring to a recent military action against the city, or if he is saying that still, after 150 years, the wall of the city have not yet been rebuilt after the defeat to the Babylonians. We do know that early on, there was an effort by the first wave of returnees to rebuild the walls, but that was interrupted. So upon hearing this news, Nehemiah prays to the Lord. In fact, for days he weeps and he mourns and he fasts. He prays that God will listen to him. He confesses the sins of Israel against the Lord. And then sometime after that, Nehemiah is performing his normal duties and attending to his boss, King Artaxerxes. And the king comments that Nehemiah seems sad and asks why. And Nehemiah replies, why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my ancestors' graves, lies waste, and its gates have been destroyed by fire? The king asked Nehemiah what he would like to do about it. And Nehemiah, he says a quiet prayer to God. And then he screws up his courage and he answers the king saying, if it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor with you, I ask that you send me to Judah, to the city of my ancestors' graves, so that I may rebuild it. Now, there's more to this request than simply allowing Nehemiah some personal time to go off and deal with some personal matters. If the king agrees, then Nehemiah will not only require funding for this project, but he will then become something like an interim governor of the city. He will be the king's man in charge in Jerusalem. He will have royal authority. So upon hearing this, the king's next question is, how long do you plan to be gone? And when do you plan to return? And Nehemiah gives him a date. And then Nehemiah does ask for two more things. He asks for letters of introduction to the governors of the province beyond the river, which will allow him to travel through that province. And then he asks for a letter granting timber from the royal forest. And the king agrees to these things, and Nehemiah recognizes now that the gracious hand of God is with him. And this is what underlies these books of Ezra and Nehemiah: God's active hand. The Jews really should not have recovered from that massive defeat at the hands of the Babylonians, but God is present. And God moves Cyrus. And Cyrus supports the return of the Jews and the rebuilding of the temple. And God sends Ezra. And God inspires Nehemiah. And yes, there are obstacles along the way, but each time, God's hand is there. Without God's intervention, the Jews would not have survived as a people. So, Nehemiah sets out to go to Jerusalem with a cohort of the king's troops to protect him and support him. And when he gets there, not everybody's glad to see him. He creates a stir among those local governors who are less than pleased that someone is there who has come to seek the welfare of the people of Israel. On the third night after arriving in Jerusalem, Nehemiah secretly takes a few men with him, and they ride around the city, surveying the condition of the walls and the gates. No one there yet knows of his plans to rebuild. And then the next day, Nehemiah calls together the city leaders, and he says to them, "You see the trouble we are in, how Jerusalem lies in ruins with its gates burned. Come, let us rebuild the walls of Jerusalem so that we may no longer suffer disgrace." He explains how God has been gracious to him and how he also has the support of the king of Persia. And the people respond by shouting, "Let us start building." And so, as Nehemiah writes, they committed themselves to the common good. Immediately, two governors in the region begin ridiculing Nehemiah's building plan. They question if the Jews are rebelling against the king now, and we'll see more of these two governors in the coming weeks. Their words, you'll recall, mirror the accusations made against Jerusalem 150 years earlier, that Jerusalem was at heart a rebellious city. And that if the walls were rebuilt, the king would lose all control over the people. Nehemiah responds to these naysayers, saying that God supports the Jewish people. And these outsiders, they have no claim over Jerusalem or of what happens there. Now, all of this takes place in chapters 1 and 2 of Nehemiah. Then in chapter 3, we encounter one of those lists that we have found so frequently throughout Ezra and Nehemiah. And normally, I say, just skip the list. It's a bunch of names. But this one's different. I would urge you to read this list, for it is a list of the people of Jerusalem and the sections of the walls and gates that they agree to rebuild. The chapter, chapter 3, begins saying that the high priest Eliashib and his fellow priest rebuilt the gate known as the Sheep Gate. And when they are done, because they are priests, they consecrate that gate. And then from there, work continues in each direction around the city. For example, in chapter 3, we read, Hanun and the inhabitants of Zanoah repaired the valley gate. They rebuilt it and set up its doors, its bolts, and its bars, and repaired 1,000 cubits of the wall as far as the dung gate. And the chapter goes on describing who's involved with each rebuilding. And in your bulletin insert, you'll find a map of Jerusalem, which lists all these gates and sections of wall. You can read how they correspond with chapter 3 and the names given there. I don't expect that these people did all the actual work themselves. They were the city leaders. More than likely, they financed their sections and supervised its completion. But the point is that this was not just Nehemiah building the walls. It was the community working together. This became an act of healing. Why are these walls so important? Well, it's difficult for us today to grasp the necessity of city walls. However, without walls, Jerusalem would be naked. It was defenseless. Jerusalem's geographic location placed it on valuable trade routes, and the region's geopolitical powers preferred that Jerusalem remain weak. Without walls, Jerusalem was weak. Her neighbors could exploit her as they wished. A secure Jerusalem would pose a threat to their power and their profitability. When Nehemiah first received news about Jerusalem from his brother, he was told that given the broken walls and gates of the city, that the people were living in trouble and shame. Their shame was to inhabit a broken and insecure city where foreign armies marched through at will. Nehemiah challenges the city leaders to rebuild those city walls so that they would no longer suffer disgrace. Nehemiah went to Jerusalem, not simply to build walls around the city. His purpose was to rebuild the house of God. Yes, the temple, it had been rebuilt, and yes, the temple is the house of God. But the people who worship the Lord, they don't live in the temple. They live in the city. And living in the city was a source of demoralizing shame. Nehemiah wanted to rebuild the people because they are the true house of God. If the people are broken with shame and despair, then God's house is not whole. In the same way, we, as God's people, we are more than just a church building at the corner of West Main and South Greenwood. We are part of a larger community. Our community is our town, our state, our nation, even our world. And that is why we as a church engage in acts of mission and of outreach. We do these things because our Christ commands us. We know that. But we also do these things because each act of compassion rebuilds a section of wall somewhere. Each act brings a measure of healing to some community. Just as Nehemiah sought healing in his world, so we should work for healing in ours. Amen.